laws. Laws don't govern. Men do. The same men who governed before are here now in that room. They have his ear. We've got to be clean now.
First, the land must be given back.
And if Madero doesn't do it?
Yes.
Then he's an enemy, too.
You're his emissary, his officer, his friend.
I'm a friend to no one and to nothing except logic.
We cannot have an armed and angry nation. It is time, General, to stack our arms. In fact, that is the first step. That is my first request of you. Stack your arms and disband your army.
And who will enforce the laws once we have them?
The regular army. The police.
They're the ones we just fought and beat. Give me your watch. Give me your watch. Give it to me. It's a beautiful watch. Expensive. I'll take my rifle. Now you can have your watch back. But without this, never. You draw a strong moral. You ask us to disarm. How could we get our land? Or keep us if we disarm. But it's not that simple. It's a matter of time.
And time! Time is one thing to a lawmaker, but to a farmer there's a time to plant and a time to harvest. And you cannot plant and harvest time.
General Zapata, do you trust me? Just the way my people trust me. I trust you and they trust me as long as we keep our promises. And not a moment longer. Where are you going?
I'm going home. What will you do there?
I will wait, but not for long.
Shut the fuck up! We're all gonna die here. These are cops!
Oh, they're cops, you piece of shit.
Really, something I never told you about me. I hate fucking cops!
And girls, what did they say? They said, I have nothing to say. Did you understand that? They wanted to make sure you understood that. And if you don't go by that, don't come crying to me. I've had a lot of guys over the years come crying to me. Well, they stopped me for this, they stopped me for that. And I said, well, what did you do? Well, I told them I didn't do it. And I told them, I said, forget it. That's not the way you do it. I have nothing to say. Any high-priced New York Jew lawyer will tell you that. I have nothing to say. Get a lawyer. But in the meantime, I have nothing to say. Somebody was asking me where I got that song. And it took me a while to find it again. I've got so damn much stuff in these computers around here. Well, according to this, it comes from Patriot's Call. And the CD supposedly is We've Not Yet Begun to Fight from Patriot's Call. So if you can find those guys, well, that's where it came from. Well, it is the August the 9th, 2016, and this is Tuesday. I always know for sure when Tuesday comes around because that's when the trash man comes, and that's when my dogs go crazy. They want to eat the trash man. So I always remember it's Tuesday. I didn't have a 6-foot fence wall between those dogs and those trash men, they'd have big problems. And so would I. They got race police now in Britain in the schools because there's so much racism now. The kids are jumping up and going crazy, man. They're becoming more racist every day. Here's a little bit about the race police in the schools in Britain. Well,
an increase in cases of alleged racism, because how you define racism is a very hot political topic at the moment. So there's this group called the New Schools Network. They've released a report saying that an average of 20 children per day are excluded from British schools due to what they call racist abuse. Now, how you define racist abuse can apply from anything to something like graffiti, to outright bullying and harassment, to swearing. One thing that's become clear in a different report, however, is that children as young as 3 are being excluded due to alleged racism.
Now, this is kids that are picking on and saying, hey, you said something racist, you did something racist, so therefore you've got to go home, you're kicked out of school. Is that what they're trying to point out, that the British people are becoming increasingly racist? Is that what they're trying to drill home, and particularly to young people?
Well, they're trying to basically say, look, the number of people being accused of racism, the number of school kids being accused of racism is going up. But what actually counts as racism, no one's really sure. For example, how exactly can a 3-year-old kid be racist in the same way that an adult is? And then we have the school inspection group over here called Ofsted, who are in charge of going around all the state schools in the country and holding them to account, seeing if they're teaching kids properly. Now, they are encouraging schools to report all sorts of racist incidents. And if a school does not report racist incidents or seems to have a low number of incidents, they're immediately accused of not taking racism seriously, almost. So you have this situation where schools can feel forced to inflate these figures in order to make it look like they're taking the problem seriously.
Nick Hallett in our London office, very disturbing.
Well, there you go. They're policing racism. In other words, anything that's probably pro-white in the British schools makes you a candidate to go home and get kicked out of school. But now conservatives are going to cry about this. Tommy, don't cry about this. This is good. Probably it would be best if they'd expel all white kids from all the schools. Things would be going better for us. So anyhow, that is the way it is. And instead of crying like the conservatives, we say, that's wonderful. Worse is better. The kids see through all this hypocrisy. makes them more racist. Kids that weren't racist to begin with become racist because of actions like this. I know that's how I got became more racist quite quickly, is because of discrimination against me, white person, and so forth. And when they passed the Rumford Fair Housing Bill in California, where you had to sell property to whoever came to your front door, Negro, Mestizo, or whoever, according to the law, then your property rights were gone. And that's when I really started turning the corner. Well, guess what? We've got some more LGBTBCABCs after us. The homos and so forth are going wild. They're trying to come up with some new laws that they can even go after your attorney if he's defending you and if he says anything to the public about the case and about your racism and homophobic ideas. They can put you in jail. They're working on it. Listen to this.
Black Lives Matter or illegal immigration. It's traditional marriage or the idea that biological sex always determines gender. The government could even go after a lawyer because of where he goes to church.
How did this... Now, they're at the House of Delegates, which is a formal meeting of the ABA, to debate it and vote on it. But how did it get to this point before... people like yourselves and Ed Meese and the Federal Society, the guys are the guardians of the Constitution. Tell me how it got here, or is this just a very preliminary stage, or is this already pretty advanced?
The LGBT left has been pushing this hardcore. This has been part of their full court press on every area of society, from professional sports to academia to Hollywood. This has been part of the full court press to make it socially unacceptable, and now for a lawyer, legally unacceptable, to even take on cases representing these people. And I should say that the rule says you cannot be sanctioned for taking on a client, but if you go to the media, talk about your client's case, like if you represent the Oregon cake bakers or something like that, you know, that is still verbal conduct connected with the practice of law, so they can come after you for this. This has been building for a number of months. It was voted out of committee this spring, and the statements from the ABA lawyers that are, we have a piece on Breitbart right now, I think it'll be going up as the lead now, where we quote to ABA leaders who gave testimony there, showing that they intended to do this. They said, we need to root out discrimination, we need to go to the top of the profession, and if adopted by any state, this rule will also indoctrinate law students to condition them that they must accept the government's new preferred position on everything from same-sex marriage to transgenderism to racial identity and politics to amnesty for illegal aliens, or those students can be denied a license to practice law.
Can
this design has a long-term purge from the legal profession, and this is the end of the road. The big vote is today. Today or tomorrow, if they vote it out, then this becomes a fight in all 50 state Supreme Courts to stop this fascist rule from taking effect, and if necessary, taking it to the Supreme Court, challenging it on First Amendment grounds.
Okay, CONCACAF is going to be all over this today. There'll be breaking news on this all day on the Breitbart site.
Now, I want you to understand, the reason I play this stuff for you is not because I'm a right-wing conservative crybaby. Meh, meh, meh. They're going to get us. They're coming after us. The reason I play all this stuff is to show you how bad it is so that you can prepare yourself for whatever has to happen in the future. That is why I play it. Not to cry baby. We got to get a petition up and we got to go down and demonstrate at the courthouse and we got to write our congressman. Bullshit. Worse is better for now. Yeah, if you don't understand the psychology of that and the logic of that, like the man said at the beginning of the show, I serve only logic. Yeah. And that's one of the best statements that you could hear. I serve logic, not laws, logic. Did you ever notice how U.S. news reporting, they almost never say Chinese communist? Because technically China is still a communist country. Now, I hear the BBC say Chinese communists, and I hear other news agencies saying Chinese communists. But the United States, and that's because capitalism has put a kibosh to that because they're making too much money off the Chinese. They don't want anything to interfere with that by an insult. Well, it's not an insult to them. I guess they're proud of being communistic, so there you go. Actually, they're exactly what communism really is now, state capitalist, you know. Just like that, state capitalism. Now, if you want to keep up on what's going on around the world in a nutshell, well, go up there to Roku. If you can get Roku on your cable system, or you can subscribe, it's about $6 or $7 a month. And every day they give you about half an hour to 45 minutes of very short but very poignant encapsulated news stories going on all around the world, all the violence and all the rioting and all the bombing and everything. And that's Euro News. And they have it in English or various languages. I do it every day. Go get all the news from around the world in just a short time. And watching this Euro News got every riot that goes on around the world. But you know what's funny about all these riots? Or maybe not funny at all, but thousands of people, hundreds of people running through the streets with sticks and stones and maybe a little mace and maybe once in a while a Molotov cocktail. But nobody's shooting. I mean, nobody's shooting. I mean, you know, they're out there, they've got these almost pitched battles with each other, but you think if anyone was really serious about it, they'd be shooting, because they're rising up against the system, and they might as well go all the way. What do you think? Well, I got another new big sign out in front of the house. I just fixed it up with some tracks on it, because I had been scotch taping the letters on, and that's a job. Sticky fingers and everything. So I got the tracks, and I've screwed those tracks onto my Masonite. It's white on one side, and I can put my 8-inch letters, and I'm putting another one together for 4-inch letters, so it'll be a lot easier for me to change the sign. I'll send you a shot of it maybe in the mail today. Oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you what the sign says. Hang the filthy 50. Hang the filthy 50. You know who that is, don't you? It's all those organization men, all those establishment men. Most of them were involved in the fake so-called weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and actually led to all this shit in the Middle East. Most of these 50 guys in the Republican Party that are crying about Trump were involved in creating that war where thousands of American white soldiers, Marines, died, and they're still dying over there. It started right there in Iraq. And these filthy 50s that signed this letter against Donald Trump are the main culprits.
This thing about xenophobia, I have to address this. Because the Democrats, there's two groups here. They're the people that are having some emotional reaction. Some faulty synapses are firing, and they go, well, it's Trump. Of course it's not. It's a racism and xenophobia. That's what Tea Party's all about. And then there are the people that are worried that the oligarchy and global order, you know, maybe taking a hit here. But this thing about xenophobia, what is xenophobia? What is it? It's the fear of foreigners. It's the fear of the outsiders. Now, what's funny is to say you should never have a fear of an outsider, well, then leave your door unlocked every night.
don't clutch your purse a little closer to your body when you're walking in a dark parking garage or something. The idea that all fear, and I love this about Democrats because I really think they've got something here. And it worked for them well for a while, but I think it's kind of run out. They've overplayed the hand of you're a racist, you're a sexist, you're a homophobe, you're a transphobe, you're a this phobe, you're that phobe, you're afraid of this, you're afraid of that. Like, these are fearless people. I guess the only legitimate fears are any rational interpretation of the Second Amendment, which is to say, as it's written, and any discussion of encroaching on so-called abortion rights. If we started talking about rolling back Roe v. Wade, you want to see what fear looks like? Anyway, because, you know, what are you going to do if you can't kill babies, right? By the way, we're not going to get much into this. This George Bayes Andrews thing is a non-story. There was no active shooter. There was no active shooter. They were doing an active shooter drill. So there's nothing to see here, nothing to talk about. But something the Democrats do all the time, which is posit any angry reaction as fear, fear being something born out of an irrational reaction. The most irrational people, no matter how many times they witness the failure of tax increases or regulations or this or that, they want more of it, and they want it now. As a matter of fact, there's a new poll out that an overwhelming majority of Democrats think Obama deserves a third term. You want to talk about irrational people? There it is. But they've come up with this really kooky thing, and it worked for them for so long, that fear is the reaction of an immature or inferior or narrow-minded mind. And they've played that card over and over. Hit, stick, you know? They've been playing that card every single time. You know, doubling down, splitting aces. And it's worked. But everything cut. All good things come to an end. Time flies when you're having fun. The idea that we should not have an immigration policy at all, meaning a free flow, open border, maybe just checking names and birth dates, or else we're xenophobic. No, having a legitimate vetting process of those we desire coming to this country, whose addition to the country will be an addition as a whole, is not xenophobic. Most people aren't opposed to that. But no nation, no unique place on earth, no culture, no society can take in more outsiders than natives and maintain its character. It's impossible.
Well, I took that little piece off of this Wilkow guy who's on the radio, right-wing conservative, but, you know, he blames it all on the Democrats. Well, the Republicans do almost the same thing. They're sneakier at it. And they like to call us names, too. You go on Breitbart and all these places, and they condemn us just as much as the Democrats. So anyhow, but I thought that was interesting. Xenophobia. Well, like it says, leave your door unlocked if you're not xenophobic a little bit at night. I don't call it xenophobic, I just say concern. You're concerned about who comes into your house. You're concerned about who comes into your country. Your enemies say you're afraid of them. Well, no, there's times you could be afraid, but most of the time you're not. You're just concerned, and if they're going to give you any trouble, you're going to give them what for, right? Give me that goddamn shotgun and get your ass out of here. That's not fear. That's just concern. But those progressives, they like those big words like xenophobic and stuff like that. They just love that because that proves they're intellectually superior to us country folk. Well, let's look into the happy Jew. society. How the Jews doing today? They're always wondering how we're doing today. Most people in the United States don't talk about Israel much. It says here, in response to these events, and the tone of, it's called the religious rift deepens between Israel and diaspora. In response to these events, the tone and language coming from the ultra-Orthodox authorities on the one side and from the non-Orthodox religious leaders who are some of Israel's strongest supporters on the other side is growing increasingly harsh. We got a civil war going here among the Hebes. For the largely ultra-Orthodox controlled chief rabbinate and the ultra-Orthodox lay leaders and politicians in Israel, the focus is on rejecting any grant of legitimacy to the non-Orthodox streams. Those streams, meanwhile, in Israel and abroad, are increasingly focusing their demands on the Israeli government. They want them to do it their way. The question is, how will this affect the broader relationship between Israel and diaspora, different Jew factions? The proposed plan for the Kotel was first accepted by the government in January 2016. A painfully wrought compromise, it was the culmination of nearly 3 decades of fighting between the ultra-Orthodox, who control the Western Wall. That's not much, just a wall, and spooks in the sky, I guess, hang out there, and the non-Orthodox movements. The long struggle included numerous appeals to Israel's High Court of Justice and 3 years of intensive negotiations involving the government, the Western Wall Heritage Foundation, the ultra-Orthodox organization that manages the Western Wall, and representatives of Judaism's liberal religious movements in Israel and abroad. That don't sound too much like togetherness to me. Sounds like a little division over there in Hebetown. According to that agreement, a new section of the wall, to be known as Ezrat Israel, the section for all Israel. Now this is funny because this wall is, what, a couple of 100 feet long, probably 50 foot tall. And that's where everybody goes and kisses the rocks and puts love letters in the cracks and the blocks and all that kind of shit. Gets down on their knees, and once in a while they have a fist fight between the Orthodox and the non-Orthodox. Well, now they're talking about having certain sections for certain Jews. I thought that was discrimination and segregation. Well, it was to have been established to the south of the main plaza in an area popularly known as Robinson's Arch to symbolize the equality between the sections, a new single entrance for all 3 sections. And you thought Jews had it all together. They fight over everything. The men and women segregated Orthodox prayer areas, and the new Ezrat Israel section was to be built at the plaza. The government approved this plan despite the opposition of ultra-Orthodox parties in Netanyahu's coalition. Well, they bitch about everything, but they don't want to pay any taxes. At the time, Knesset member Moshe Gafni, leader of the ultra-Orthodox United Torah Judaism Party, these are the real class nuts, I'll tell you. Yeah, there's one section I was in there that's all ultra-Orthodox. And it's observing how they were living. It was interesting. Well, anyhow, they announced the plan and for good measure called Reformed Jews a group of clowns who stabbed the Holy Torah in the back. Rabbi David Joseph, a prominent Sephardic rabbi, labeled the Reformed Jews as idolaters, simply and literally. Beyond the name-calling, the ultra-Orthodox continued to apply pressure to Prime Minister Benjamin Nitwit's coalition. Soon enough, Nitwit backed down, saying that he would seek more time despite the deadlines he had promised for implementing the plan. You realize how nerve-wracking and cause you nightmares to run a country like that, full of psychopaths and mentally ill people? The whole damn country. I mean, you know, the obvious, some of the secular Jews are just pretty straightforward, no problem, but most of them are fanatics, crazy people, if you scratch under the surface. They don't appear that way if you, because when you leave them alone, they're just going around their business, but if you challenge them on anything, boy, I'll tell you. Quote, "We thought we had reached a consensus," said Yishar Hess. Wonder if he's in it related to Rudolf Hess, executive director and CEO of the Masorti conservative movement in Israel, told the Forward magazine. "For the government to back down now because of ultra-Orthodox pressure is a slap in the face to all Jews." Wow. All Jews everywhere, it says. "Like the fight over the Kotel and the Mikvah law is another attempt by the largely ultra-Orthodox controlled chief rabbinate to refuse recognition to the non-Orthodox denominations. You get on out of here. To us, you're like niggers. Get away from us." The law passed July 25th effectively blocks the liberal Jewish movements from using state-run ritual baths. And circumvents a high court decision barring the exclusion of reform or conservative converts. So you want to take a bath, boy, they're going to keep you out of there. You're just going to have to stink if you're not an Orthodox, extreme Orthodox. In a Knesset speech praising the law, David Azoulay, the Minister for Religious Services, dismissed the non-Orthodox denominations as cults. Ulze, a member of the ultra-Orthodox Shah's party, you know there's about 100 parties over there in Israel, they'd fall apart in 5 minutes if it wasn't for the Arabs putting pressure on them all the time and the United States sending them money. He vowed, "We won't allow them to control us remotely or to damage the country's Jewish character." Well, I wonder what they mean by that. What for sure is the Jewish character? Rabbi Rick Jacobs, president of the North American-based Union for Reform Judaism, and Rabbi Gilad Karib, head of the Israeli Movement for the Progressive Judaism, accused the government of no less than failing to uphold, quote, "the promise of a democratic Jewish state that looks out for the welfare of all Jews," unquote. That's what he's saying. Ultra-Orthodox leaders have focused mainly on efforts by Reform and Conservative Judaism to assume legitimacy in Israel, but not solely. In July, state rabbinical courts refused to recognize a conversion overseen by Rabbi Haskell Luchstein, a revered New York-based Orthodox rabbi who formerly headed Kehillat Jesulim, a modern Orthodox synagogue on Manhattan's Upper East Side. Oh, God. Separately, Luchstein oversaw the conversion of the Ivanka Trump, daughter of the Republican president candidate Donald Trump. Oh, training her to be a Jew. In the past, the rabbinate has also questioned the conversions performed by Rabbi Avi Weiss, founding rabbi at the Hebrew Institute of Riverdale, an Orthodox congregation in the Bronx, and Rabbi Shlomo Riskin, founding rabbi of the Lincoln Square Synagogue in Manhattan and chief rabbi of Efrat, a town in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. Quote, "What is happening now is the delegitimization of the state of Israel." How about that? That's not the Arabs doing that. That's the Jews themselves. "Not by our enemies, but by our own government," unquote. A Jewish agency head Natan Sharinsky told the Forward magazine. Sharinsky, who brokered the now-abandoned compromise plan for the Kotel, whatever that is, called on the government to recognize that the majority of Jews in North America belong to the non-Orthodox denominations, that the State of Israel belongs to everybody. That's a Jew. But this, says Rabbi Bezalel Cohen, who heads the Kakamiya Lev Yeshiva in Jerusalem, is precisely what the ultra-Orthodox establishment cannot do. Cohen, who also defines himself as an ultra-Orthodox, calls for a distinction between the style and the substance of the ultra-Orthodox position. This is wearing me out, man. These Jews fighting. They got no time for fighting the Nazis. They're fighting each other. That's okay. You got to look in on these people once in a while and see what they're up to, because the regular papers in this country and TV and radio, they'll never do it. No. Can you imagine turning on the radio in your community and have the announcer say, "We have some very critical bad shit on the Jews here, and we're going to tell you about it." You know, this is the year of the rat over in China, and the rat, the zodiac figure symbol, was on the wall in Washington, D.C., and somebody came along and put Jew on it, on the rat. So they're all upset about that, damn it. That's really racist. Last week, the Movement for Black Lives Matter released a comprehensive and provocative platform called A Vision for Black Lives, Policy Demands for Black Power, Freedom, and Justice. Because of a sentence that ambiguously called for the divestment from Israel, Jewish media outlets immediately declared the document a vision for the destruction of the Jewish state and the black boys from the Black Lives Make Right. They're headed over there going to attack Israel. They got a couple of used PT boats from World War II. Thankfully for us, the vision for Black Lives is not about Jews or the Jewish state. To assume the contrary is the height of arrogance. For those that bother to read the platform itself, the paragraph in question clearly calls for the scaling back of U.S. military spending, an idea that's shared by 32% of the Americans. It's too bad it's not 75%. It's worth reading in full. Okay, here we go. This is what the black boys say. The U.S. military accounts for over 50% of this discretional federal spending, a total of $598.5 billion spent every year, as compared to $70 billion spent on education, $66 billion spent on health care, $63.2 billion spent on housing, and $29.1 billion spent on Social Security and unemployment. In addition, approximately $3 billion in U.S. aid is allocated to Israel, a state that practiced systematic discrimination and has maintained a military occupation of Palestine for decades. They've also got a prison full of black sub-Saharan invaders down there in southern Israel, one of the biggest prisons in the world. For the black boys. They don't talk about that much. Together with aid to Egypt, Israel's most important regional ally, this figure represents nearly 75% of all U.S. aid dollars. Wow. As these figures demonstrate, resources and funds needed for reparations and for building a just and equitable society so everybody's equal society domestically are indeed instead used to wage war against the majority of the world's communities. They're spending 75% of all U.S. aid over there. Wow. The idea that an Israel occupation exists is also nothing new. It has been the official position of the U.S. government since 67 to claim that this idea is radical is intellectually dishonest. Boy. Sambo's really telling them off here. The platform also claims that by supporting Israel, the U.S. is complicit in the genocide taking place against the Palestinian people, and that Israel, an apartheid state with over 50 laws on the books that sanction discrimination against Palestinian people. Palestinian homes and lands are routinely bulldozed to make way for illegal Israeli Jew settlements. Israeli soldiers are regularly arrested and detained Palestinians as young as 4 years old and beat the shit out of them. Every day, Palestinians are forced to walk through military checkpoints along the U.S.-funded apartheid wall. Well, I told you, they're a bunch of Nazis. Yeah, the Jews liked the way the Nazis operated. So they copying everything the Nazis did. And it's working out well for them. Who's going to challenge them? Certainly not the United States or any politician in Washington. We never talk bad about Jaime. Anyhow, the Jew-Palestinian thing is never going to be solved. It's kept that way on purpose. Yeah, you didn't think so, did you? Well, it has to do with keeping the armaments and weapons of war going, being shipped all over the world, especially the Middle East. Got to keep selling those arms and guns and bombs and atomic bombs and all that kind of stuff. That's what it's all about. And as long as they're making money off the arms trade, nobody's... Who wants peace? They're having a ball, man. They're all living high on the hog. I didn't see any street people in Israel myself, where I was. I never saw any poor, downtrodden Jews. I saw them driving nice cars. I saw them driving nice cars on nice highways. I saw them living in nice apartments and homes. They didn't seem to be doing too bad to me. So it's obvious they should share some of this stuff with the Negroes, damn it. The organizers of the movement for Black Lives are smart, perhaps brilliant. They're not going to get everything they want. They know this. Their platform is not about Israel or Palestine. Their platform is not about each specific policy proposal. This platform is not about rights within an existing system. It is about creating a new system of power and autonomy built on the back of the white working man. Whether or not the Jewish community takes offenses at the specifics, this time around, the leaders of the Black America could care less. Well, it's going to be interesting which way these Ashkenazim or white Jews are going to go. They've been riding the middle of the road for a long time. Well, here's another liberal progressive that's not going to be able to push race mixing anymore. A New York City woman was killed and possibly set on fire after a sexual assault while jogging in the Massachusetts less than a week after a runner was murdered in Queens, according to reports Monday. Vanessa Marcotti, a pretty 27-year-old Google accounts manager, was visiting her mom in Princeton, Massachusetts on Sunday when she left for a workout around 1 p.m. and never came back. Her body was found in the woods about a half mile from her mother's home at 8:20 p.m., that night, police said the body had been sexually assaulted and burnt. And guess who your guess would be, the race would be of who did it? We don't know yet. Maybe wrong, but I think it's probably the usual suspects. Well, I see a couple of people who were killed in the terror attack in Benghazi have sued Hillary Clinton. Going to take her to court. How far do you think that's going to go? You know, I've got an idea. It reminds me of what Jerry Brown said years ago about the Fourth Estate, talking about the media. I think what they want to do is get the Republican Party out of the way so the new party can be the corporate media party. Yeah, why not? They're running things, they're promoting things, they're distorting things, they're lying about things. Why not run things? The media party of America. The corporate media party of America.
Wallace was in town for a television program, and following the taping, reporters asked him to expand on what he had said about his belief that Arthur Bremmer, the man who tried to kill him, was not acting alone.
I've always said there were some questions about him, about the shooting, that were unanswered in my mind. How did the man acquire money enough when he was hardly made a living to travel over the country, to buy guns, to stay at the Waldorf Astoria, to rent limousines, and things of that sort? The fact that he kept a diary. Sirhan kept a diary. Oswald kept a diary. This man never kept a diary in his whole life up until this time. I never have thought that Arthur Bremmer probably was alone, but I have never in my mind indicated in my mind or otherwise that when the question proposed, propounded to me, do you think that Bremmer was connected with the plumbers, which are of course connected with the president's office? And I want to say emphatically that I do not, under any circumstances, want to imply one iota that the President of the United States knew or had anything to do with my being shot.
Governor Wallace refused to say whether he would run for president again in 1976. He all but declared that he will again be a candidate for governor of Alabama next year. This is Doug Ramsey in New York.
Yeah, whatever happened to Arthur Bremmer? Is he still in prison? I haven't heard anything about him, the guy that shot Governor Wallace.
This is now all new tonight. This man, who has been critical, very critical of Tampa police in the past, saw them in a different light this weekend. Ali Muhammad is the leader of the local New Black Panthers Party. He was robbed at gunpoint in Ybor City. So he called on officers for help, and within minutes, they were able to catch the suspected robber. Fox 13's Crystal Clark is here to share this exclusive story with us. Crystal, the irony here is pretty hard to ignore.
Yeah, Chris, for someone who's normally speaking out against the wrongdoings of police, today he was applauding them for a job well done. But when it comes to violence in our community, he says there's still work to be done.
We're the one that's having a problem with the police department.
He's been vocal about the need for police reform in the city of Tampa and called for an end to black crime. Both concerns hit Ali Muhammad head-on early Saturday morning in Ybor City.
I was approached by a young black male who just came up to me and said, give me your earrings.
Held at gunpoint on 8th Avenue on his way home from DJing a club, Muhammad said he had no choice but to comply with the robber.
At the time, he didn't take my cell phone.
He took my book bag, my earrings. I'm following him.
Okay, no. Stop.
Within minutes of talking to Muhammad, officers were on the hunt.
It's an armed robbery. That's a very dangerous situation. We flooded the area.
The suspect was arrested and identified as 18-year-old Antoine Robertson. According to police, he robbed two other women that night.
One lady, she was in tears. She couldn't believe. She said he had the gun in her mouth.
Muhammad, who got his laptop, jewelry, and ID back, said he couldn't help but feel gratitude toward the officers.
Police could be hostile. And they could be very belligerent. Friday night, I met some cool officers that was about business, and that was getting a bad guy off the street.
His own misfortune, an example, he says, of the black-on-black crime he advocates against.
Every black life is valuable right now, especially a black male. And for him to keep going on with the norm, the process of going to jail and ending your life like that, as our boys are doing nowadays, it's very hurting.
He says the traumatic event is an example of why police and the community must be able to come together for a greater good.
I congratulate the police because I'm very anti-police, but I'm not against police relations and community relations.
Now, that 18-year-old suspect, Antoine Robertson, is believed to be homeless. And tonight he is also behind bars. He's facing three charges of armed robbery, possession of a firearm, as well as possession of drugs. Chris?
Very
well, that's all I can take for today. I got to get out of here.
The man come up and he said, give me your laptop, give me your earrings, man. He took my telephone, too. I couldn't even call in to get me some drugs. I hate the cops, but I thank the cops for saving my life and giving me my stuff back. Yeah. But I hate the cops.
Thank you.